We'll call the Civil Law Committee to order. A quorum is present. Little housekeeping quick, members and those of you in the audience here to observe the committee. We're going to be taking testimony on House File 1613. We'll give the proponents 45 minutes. And if you're here and have not talked to the proponents and plan to testify, I would ask you to talk to Tom Preachert, who I'll ask to go to the back left of the room, my left. If you're not on their list, please do that so they can help coordinate their time. If you're here to and plan to testify in opposition to the bill, please go to the back right of the room if you haven't coordinated or talked with Monica Meyer, who will be coordinating and organizing the 45 minutes of opposition testimony. We will hold questions, members, until after both sides have presented and offered their testimony. We expect we will pass move this bill out today, and before session is the expectation for the committee. And so with that, Representative Gottwalt, welcome to our committee. The chair will move House File 1613 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. You may begin. We will give you a 10-minute and a 5-minute and a 1-minute warning. If you use up that much time for 45 minutes, it will begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The bill before you, House File 1613, will place before Minnesota voters in 2012 the question, shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as a marriage in Minnesota? Members, part of the reason for bringing this forward, we have seen attempts by the courts and by legislators to change the definition of marriage in Minnesota. It's already in state law, I understand, but we have seen attempts to change it. And we think it is very appropriate at this time to bring this bill forward and put before the voters of Minnesota the question in the 2012 election. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'll take questions.
Representative Gottwell, we will hold with questions till we're done. Why don't you start with your first testifier and have them organize so we can move through in a timely fashion. I'll let you begin and just have your next one ready right behind them.
Very good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Please identify yourself for the record. That goes for all persons coming forward to testify. We need a record of who you are and what group you may or may not organize, what group you may represent. Ms. Collette.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and other distinguished guests. My name is Teresa Collette. I'm a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, and I also have assisted various attorneys generals throughout the country defending laws related to family and life issues. I'm here to testify today in support of Bill 1613, a little verbal dyslexia there, Bill 1613, which would allow the Minnesota voters to determine the definition of marriage. My testimony represents my professional knowledge both as an academic and practicing lawyer and does not represent in any way the University of St. Thomas or any other organization or individual besides myself. At the outset, it's very important to establish what House File 1613 does and does not do. House File 1613 presents the voters of the state with a simple question. Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid as recognized as a marriage in Minnesota? By this language, the bill allows the citizens of this state to decide about the fundamental ordering of civil society. It does not, as some have charged in the media, write discrimination into the state constitution. Just as Article 7, Section 1 of the Minnesota Constitution defines who is eligible to vote in this state, the right, a right most precious among all of our civil liberties, this amendment proposed would simply allow the voters of this state to define who is eligible to marry in this state. It merely proposes a definition of marriage that does not differ from the current statute, which is on the books now. It's important to also note what this amendment does not do. It does not alter the definition of marriage as it is currently statutorily embodied, nor does it deprive any Minnesotan of any existing legal right. The proposed amendment does not prohibit the legislative creation of alternative legal relationships for non-marital domestic partnerships, such as the domestic partnerships established by some Minnesota cities, nor does it deny to this legislature the ability to create a statewide domestic relationship like reciprocal beneficiaries, a status that was created by the Hawaii legislature in 1997, a status which I have myself endorsed in writing publicly, which allows any two consenting adults who are not legally eligible to marry, for example, two siblings, two men, two women, a parent and an adult child, etc., who are willing to undertake legally binding commitments of mutual support. The bill simply allows the people of the state of Minnesota to confirm the existing definition of marriage in the state constitution. So what is the legal status of marriage and why is this bill necessary? There's widespread agreement throughout the country that marriage is a unique relationship between one man and one woman. This is evidenced by the fact that every time voters have been allowed the opportunity to decide what the definition of marriage is, they have endorsed the definition proposed in House File 1613. 19 state amendments prohibit the legal recognition of civil unions, when a total of 30 state amendments define marriage as the union of one man and one woman. In total, 40 states, or 90% of all states in the union, either through constitutional, legislative, or judicial action, recognize marriage as the union of one man and one woman. There is simply nothing radical about this bill. In contrast, only 5 states characterize the unions of same-sex couples as marriages, and 3 of those do so under judicial order. A 4th has recently embraced same-sex marriage after submitting to a judicial order establishing civil unions in that state previously. Another 5 states have created civil unions statutorily, which are the functional equivalent of marriage. Those 10 states comprise 20% of the American public, but note again that 4 of the states recognizing same-sex marriage involved judicial action. Minnesota is one of a minority states that protect the definition of marriage through statute only, and these statutes are under attack. Last month, the Minnesota District Court, in fact, rejected a claim that the statutory definition of marriage violates the Minnesota Constitution, but plaintiff's counsel have publicly stated that they plan to appeal this ruling. Last legislative session, this committee heard 3 bills that would have fundamentally altered the legal definition of marriage. House File 893 would have created same-sex marriage in this state, while House File 999 would have abolished the legal status of marriage entirely, substituting in its place a status entitled civil unions. House File 1740 would have required Minnesotans to recognize same-sex unions entered into in other states. It is clear from these efforts, both judicial and legislative, that the question concerning how marriage is to be defined is deeply contested, and it is only proper that the citizens of this state be allowed to define who is eligible to enter into that legally binding arrangement, just as they are allowed to define who is allowed to vote in this state. The legal status is woven throughout Minnesota law. One GLBT organization claims that there are 515 obligations and rights that are impacted by marital status. While I cannot affirm the accuracy of this number or their characterization of these statutes, I do not dispute that the definition of marriage is significant to the legal regime in this state. Any change in the definition of marriage will have a substantial and long-lasting effect in a variety of areas. There are at least 8 areas in which we have seen conflict arise from those seeking to redefine marriage and those who adhere to the traditional definition of marriage. The first is that public resources in Massachusetts have been used to promote the moral equivalency of same-sex unions and marriages between a man and a woman. David Parker, in fact, spent a night in jail after having been led from his son's elementary school in handcuffs because he simply asked that his kindergarten child not be instructed that same-sex unions were the functional equivalent of marriage. In addition to that, public funds have been denied to various organizations, including the Boy Scouts. Churches have been denied tax-exempt status. Public employees have been disciplined and demoted. Private businesses have been fined for refusal to participate in same-sex commitment ceremonies. Private universities that are religiously affiliated have been required to allow same-sex couples in their married student housings. And students in state universities have been expelled from professional programs because they simply asked to not counsel couples in same-sex relationships, but to transfer them to other people. These cases suggest that what is at issue is not equality of benefits or fairness, but rather it is approval and coerced affirmation of same-sex unions. The simple fact is that all this bill does is put the question of how we define marriage before the people of Minnesota. Article 1, Section 1 of our state constitution states, "Government is instituted for the security, benefit, and protection of the people in whom all political power is inherent, together with the right to alter, modify, or reform government required within the public good." There is nothing radical, remarkable, or objectionable to this bill, and I urge you to allow the people of Minnesota to vote on this important issue.
Thank you, Ms. Collette. Next, Representative Godwin. If somebody has their cell phone on, be sure to shut them off. It gives us interference sometimes.
2 minutes.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record, please.
I'm Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, founder and president of the Ruth Institute, a project of the National Organization for Marriage. I urge you to allow the citizens of Minnesota the opportunity to vote on the proposed marriage amendment. The essential public purpose of marriage is to attach mothers and fathers to their children and to one another. To see the importance of this purpose, we must take the perspective of the child. What is owed to the child? Unlike adults, the child does not need autonomy or dependence. The child is entitled to a relationship with and care from both the people who brought him into being. Therefore, the child has a legitimate interest in the stability of his parents' union. But no child can defend these entitlements himself, nor is it adequate to make restitution after these rights have been violated. The child's rights to care and relationship must be supported proactively before harm is done for those rights to be protected at all. Marriage is society's institutional structure for protecting the legitimate interests of children. Without this public purpose, we would not need marriage as a distinct social institution. We often hear the objection that some marriages don't have children, and this is perfectly true. But every child has parents. Depriving a child of a relationship with his or her parents is an injustice to the child and should not be done without some compelling or unavoidable reason. The objection that some marriages don't have children stands the rationale for marriage on its head. It views marriage strictly from the adult's perspective instead of from the child's perspective. Same-sex couples and opposite-sex couples are different with respect to this essential public purpose of marriage, and treating different things differently is not discrimination. That is why in the few cases where courts have found opposite-sex marriage to be unlawful discrimination, they've come up with purposes for marriage that have nothing whatsoever to do with procreation. For instance, Judge Vaughn Walker, who overturned Prop 8, defined marriage this way, and I quote, "Marriage is the state recognition and approval of a couple's choice to live with each other, to remain committed to one another, and to form a household based on their own feelings about one another, and to join in an economic partnership and support one another in any dependence," close quote. Under this definition, marriage has nothing to do with children, permanence, sexual exclusivity, or even sex itself. Some college roommates could call themselves married under this definition. The essential public purpose of marriage has vanished and has been replaced with inessential private purposes. Instead of being a bedrock social institution, marriage becomes nothing but a government registry of friendships, a pointless legal convention that frankly doesn't deserve any government recognition or benefits at all. But children still need mothers and fathers. We sometimes hear claims that studies show that same-sex couples make fine parents. The most recently reported study was in the June 7, 2010 issue of the journal Pediatrics. This study was based on the self-reported results of an unrepresentative sample of lesbian mothers of 78 teenagers, hardly a sufficient data set for drawing sweeping conclusions. On the other side of the equation, we have mountains of data showing that children do need both their mothers and their fathers, and that fathers do make distinct contributions to the well-being of children. Mothers and fathers are not interchangeable. I would like to just summarize by saying I have a longer written testimony that I would be happy to share with interested parties, but in short, redefining marriage from the union of a man and a woman to the union of any two persons jettisons three foundational principles. First, the principle that children are entitled to a relationship with both parents. Second, the biological principle for determining parentage. And third, the principle that the state recognizes parentage but does not assign it. The people of Minnesota are sensible, mature people who want to be accountable for what happens in their state. The people of Minnesota deserve a chance to vote. Redefining marriage will have far-reaching consequences that ought to be fully aired. Putting this amendment on the ballot will allow that very important discussion to take place. I urge you to let the people vote.
Thank you. If you want to submit your remaining testimony to our committee administrator, we'll distribute it to the committee. You may proceed. Welcome to our committee. If you
we're getting our next testifier lined up, Mr. Chair. Just a moment.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Bishop Paul Serba, and I am the Roman Catholic Bishop of the Diocese of Duluth.
Welcome.
Thank you. I am here representing the Catholic Church, the Catholic Bishops of Minnesota. I believe it is our responsibility to speak in support of marriage as a lifelong commitment between one man and one woman in an enduring bond of love. Therefore, we wish to express our public support for House File 1613, which would give the people of Minnesota the opportunity to enshrine marriage in the Minnesota Constitution. Based on God's Word, given in divine revelation, we believe that marriage creates a sacred bond between the spouses. We hold this to be true not only for ourselves, but for all humanity. In the context of faith, marriage is willed by the Creator from the beginning to mirror God's love for the human family, and it was raised by Christ to the dignity of a sacrament to the new covenant of grace, a visible and effective sign of Jesus' sacrificial love revealed to us on the cross. As such, marriage is a constant reminder of God's love for the human race, as well as a reflection of the permanent, faithful, and fruitful bond of love between Christ and the Church. The perspective we hold on this issue is also shared by many other people of faith, both Christian and non-Christian. The Catholic Church's convictions about marriage, strengthened and reinforced by our belief in divine revelation, find ample support in principles which can be discovered by human reason alone and which have been reflected throughout human history. The obvious and intimate connection between the conjugal act and conception of new life, along with the universally recognized importance of stable marriages for the education and formation of children, removes marriage from the private sphere and places it in the public realm, an institution very much part of the common good and therefore a concern of the state. The public quality of marriage has been true throughout history and across all cultures. Both faith and reason agree, then, that marriage is an institution central to the life of human society. The committed relationship between one man and one woman calls forth the best of the spouses, not only for their own sake, but also for the well-being of their children and for the advancement of the common good. It is neither possible for us to change the definition of marriage, nor wise to attempt to do so. In defending the institution of marriage, I want to emphasize that persons with same-sex attractions are our sisters and brothers and should not be deprived of their authentic human rights, including the most fundamental rights of all, the right to life and the right to love. As Catholics, we are unabashedly pro-life and pro-love. Consequently, we oppose any discrimination against persons based on their having a same-sex attraction. At the same time, meeting authentic human needs does not require changing society's definition of marriage. Thus, we urge our government, our fellow Catholics, and all people of goodwill in the state of Minnesota to support marriage between one man and one woman, both in theory and in the practical measures that will safeguard, promote, and enhance the institution of marriage and its inseparable counterpart, the family. The presence over the past years of multiple pieces of legislation and a court case that have all sought to transform marriage from an institution focused on the needs of children into a totally new legal entity centered on the apparent happiness of adults means the time has come for society to decide the future of marriage. We ask the legislature to place on the ballot a constitutional amendment clearly defining marriage as a union of one man and one woman so that this important conversation can begin. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Bishop. Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Pierre Nielsen. I'm a senior pastor at North Heights Lutheran Church with campuses in Arden Hills and Roseville, and the senior pastor of Community of Hope Lutheran Church with campuses in Rosemount and Hastings. I'm here today humbly advocating for the inclusion of a marriage amendment on the November 2011 ballot, thereby allowing the people of the state of Minnesota to participate in the democratic process of defining marriage here in the great state of Minnesota. The proposed amendment defines marriage as the union of one man and one woman. This definition is affirmed and supported by Lutheran teaching, which is based upon clear exposition of the Bible. It is the only definition of marriage Christianity has ever known and is normative and consistent across most cultures and societies throughout history and in religious contexts from Christianity to Hinduism to Judaism. This definition of marriage is a civil and public institution as well, necessary for the well-being of society as a whole. It is the definition of marriage that formed the social fabric of these United States from earliest conception until the present day. I am also concerned about the consequences of redefining marriage in our state, as some have proposed. Some argue it will not impact religious liberties. History has shown that argument to be false. In one state, a church organization lost its state tax exemption for refusing to rent its facilities for a same-sex union ceremony. A parent was refused the right to opt his child out of public school lessons affirming same-sex marriage, and his appeal to parental notification was denied. Consequences for Christians, pastors, and churches have been realized in other countries where marriage has been redefined. The impact on religious freedoms will be very real and impact Lutheran organizations and a multitude of other Christian organizations as well. Some opponents to this amendment argue that establishing a traditional definition of marriage as absolutely normative creates a social injustice for those who don't fit that definition. But the reality is that we already set boundaries around marriage. Bigamy is outlawed, as is intra-family marriage. In other words, the cry of injustice does not itself constitute a reason for redefinition. Indeed, the greatest injustice would be to disregard what is best for the children growing up in our culture today, a stable home where they are raised by their mother and father. Surely, as a state and a country, we should aspire toward that goal. It is the role of government to establish the highest standard possible when enacting law. When it comes to the betterment of society as a whole and children specifically, a family consisting of a mother and father who are committed in marriage is foundational. To dismiss this understanding would be a societal injustice. More, to not allow the citizens of the state of Minnesota the opportunity to vote on such a critical issue would magnify any injustice. I urge you on behalf of the churches I serve and millions here in the state of Minnesota who understand that the traditional definition of marriage and the family forms the bedrock of society to place a marriage amendment defining marriage as a legal union of one man and one woman on the November 2011 ballot. Then the citizens of Minnesota can determine their own destiny on this issue. Thank you for your time and for your service to the state of the people of the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Rabbi Moshe Feller, director of the Chabad-Lubavitch movement in Minnesota. I'm here to testify in favor of the marriage amendment, which allows the people of Minnesota to vote on marriage. The Jewish position on marriage is stated very clearly in the Torah, the five books of Moses. In the first commandment, which God gave to Adam and Eve after he created them, Genesis 1:28, God blessed them and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply. After their creation, God further stated, Genesis 2:24, therefore, a man shall leave his father and his mother and cling to his wife, and they shall become one flesh. The Talmud comments on this passage, "Therefore a man shall cling to his wife and not to another man." Cling to his wife and not to someone else's wife. "And they shall become one flesh through their children." It is very clear from Scripture that the clinging of humans is to be male and female, and for the purpose of becoming one flesh through their children. Marriage in Judaism is called kiddushin, consecration. The wedding is performed by a rabbi in a sacred ceremony dating back thousands of years. If a Jewish male and female were married secularly by a justice of the peace, they are recognized as married, since this is a legal union of male and female. They can always have the sacred marriage ceremony performed later. A marriage, quote-unquote marriage, between male and female, or female and female, can never and will never be recognized as a marriage by authentic Judaism. Marriage between a man and woman is also true for all the major religious and cultural traditions. It is not simply a religious tradition, but also a human tradition and institution. It is rooted in our humanity. Failure to honor marriage as exclusively between a man and a woman will imperil society. Finally, I have concerns with the consequences of legally redefining marriage, what it will mean for the well-being of our children, and what will be taught in our state schools, and how it will impact religious freedom. If marriage is redefined by the state will then begin imposing its will on all persons in society, including religious persons and institutions. I urge you to support this legislation and allow the people of Minnesota to vote on this marriage amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the tape record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Bob Battle. I want to say to start with that I don't consider gay marriages, from my paradigm, as the same as blacks not being allowed to marry whites in the state that I grew up in, Mississippi. I will say a couple of other things, then I'm going to read a statement from the Church of God in Christ with over 7 million people in this country. I started working in the civil rights movement in 1954 when I was only 14 years old. I chaired the Human Rights Commission for the City of St. Paul for over 9 years. I'm presently serving on the United States Civil Rights Commission. I'm going to read my prepared statement here now. I am the personal representative of Bishop George McKinney, general board member of the Church of God in Christ. Marriage is a union between a man and a woman, husband and wife. The Church of God in Christ stands firmly on biblical truth, affirming the definition of marriage, which has stood the test of time and will stand until the end of time itself. Civil rights, as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. proclaims, are rooted in natural law. People of every faith and every community can rally around truth written on the human heart and visible to reason. Unions of husbands and wives are uniquely good and are uniquely necessary to the common good. These are the unions that make new life that carry out into the future. These are the union that communicate and embody the idea that children have the right to the love of both a mother and a father. Gay marriage advocates have attempted to hijack the civil rights movement and make same-sex marriage into a civil right. I know what civil rights are, and this isn't one of them. gays in America have all the fundamental civil rights as everyone else. They have the right to employment, to housing, to medical care, to equal education, and the right to ride in the front of the bus. The fundamental cause of civil rights movement was driven by the desires of segregationists and racists to treat blacks as something less than full human being. Only a marital union gives the children the full experience they deserve of being raised by a man and a woman who loves them and each other, and who promises to care for them and each other. God instituted marriage between one man and one woman, and children are the fulfillment of that love and marriage. Throughout the Bible, God treats this special union seriously. God gave marriage as a gift to Adam and Eve. They were created perfect for each other. What God has joined together, let no man put asunder. We defend marriage between one man and one woman because it is good, and because we believe a good God knew what he was doing when he created marriage. We are pleased to join together with other Americans to defend this ancient and honorable truth. For government to redefine marriage is wrong, and the effect will damage the family. The most fundamental civil rights and the right is the right to vote. That is what we are asking for on behalf of the people of Minnesota. The African American Church stands firm and steadfast on biblical principles of one man and one woman. May God bless America, and thank all of you.
Thank you, Mr. Battles.
Thank you, sir.
Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hola, mi nombre es Sergio Choi. Yo soy un pastor en Bloomington, Minnesota, y estoy aquí para pedir que dejen al pueblo votar para el matrimonio. In case you didn't understand that, my name is Sergio Choi, and I'm a pastor in the city of Bloomington. Along with my wife, we pastor a Spanish-speaking Christian non-denominational church in the city of Bloomington. We were established 11 years ago, and with the rapid growth of the Hispanic community, we are establishing a presence in the Twin Cities and around Minnesota. We are a Hispanic congregation who welcomes everyone seeking a relationship with God. I was originally born in Guatemala, raised in California and Hawaii, and lived lived in Minnesota most of my life. And I have seen the social and demographic changes in the Twin Cities and Minnesota. I consider myself a Minnesotan. I was married here, my children were born here in Minneapolis, and everything dear to me is here in Minnesota. I often visit other states and countries, and there's something about Minnesota that just makes me not want to move anywhere else. The reason I begin with this is because this is a common feeling among Hispanics living in Minnesota. I stand here before you as a Latino man who is also a pastor in the community. As Latinos, we are raised to strongly believe in family, mom, dad, brothers, and sisters. We grow up believing that our aging parents do not belong in a nursing home, but rather live with us until the day we say goodbye. We grow up believing that children don't necessarily have to leave the house when they turn 18, but they may leave the home when they get married. We believe in family gatherings where grandma cooks a traditional meal and grandpa tells us stories from his youth. We are raised by our dads to be hard workers, and the love of our mothers taught us to be sensitive to the opposite sex. Marriage between a man and a woman is the foundation of family that makes us Latinos who we are. It is one mother and one father, one man and one woman, who make up the foundation of the family. You see, I could talk your ear off with my theological reasons why I believe marriage is between a man and a woman, but I am here as a person who happens to be Hispanic or Latino, living in a wonderful state called Minnesota. When you ask me why I believe marriage is between one man and one woman, my answer would not be based on lack of love for gay or lesbians. I understand gay and lesbians are Latinos as well. I would not be able to call myself a Christian if hate was the basis of my agreement. You must remember that as Latinos, we know what rejection is. We know what separation is as well. So it is not based on that. I believe in marriage between a man and a woman because of my children. I am not here to support or not support the gay or lesbian community. I am here to support marriage. The values I received from my grandparents, parents, aunts, and uncles all lay on the foundation of marriage between one man and one woman. If it wasn't for one man and one woman many years ago, I wouldn't be here. My children would not be here today. Marriage is not just a commitment between two people who love each other, but rather a commitment between one man and one woman. That is the main ingredient of the marriage covenant. You could not call it marriage if it did not involve one man and one woman who commit to love each other in every and all stages of life until death. To this day, it inspires me to see my 93-year-old grandfather hugging and holding my 90-year-old grandmother. They cannot spend one day apart from each other. To redefine marriage is like trying to redefine water. Water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen, two very different ingredients combined together to make up water. Water is one of life's essentials on this planet. If we redefine water in the state of Minnesota and made it hydrogen and hydrogen, or oxygen and oxygen, we would not have water. We could try calling it water, but we would be lying to ourselves. Water is made up of hydrogen and oxygen. Marriage is between one man and one woman. If we allow ourselves to change something,
we're at 10 minutes, just to let you know.
Pardon?
We're at 10 minutes.
If we allow ourselves to change something as natural as water, we will eventually disappear. Instead of trying to redefine marriage, let us restore it to be more honorable in our communities. Let us restore it to be, in our children's minds, to be something of great honor. Let us tell our boys that marriage is not the end of his life, but the beginning of it. I urge you to allow the people of Minnesota, including the Latino community in Minnesota, to vote on this marriage amendment. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. We're under 10 minutes at this point, just for your information.
Mr. Chair, that would conclude the testimony from the proponents.
Very well. We will ask those planning to testify in opposition to please come forward, whoever's going to start. I'll let you coordinate who goes next and work within your 45 minutes of opposition testimony. Monica Mayer, we'll let you help coordinate that. I understand you want to testify. Welcome to our committee, and you may begin. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. And thanks for the opportunity to testify. I'm Monica Meyer. I'm the executive director of Outfront Minnesota. Outfront Minnesota is the statewide organization working for safe and equitable Minnesota for gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender Minnesotans. And we work with tens and thousands of Minnesotans across the state who want Minnesota to be a state that celebrates all people and all families. They believe in a Minnesota where people no longer fear violence, harassment, isolation, or discrimination because of who they are and who they love. If this bill moves forward, it will send our state into a divisive and polarizing battle that at the end of the day will help not one family do better. It will ask voters to decide if the discrimination some families face should be enshrined in our Constitution. And our Constitution should not be a vehicle to permanently establish second-class citizenship for some Minnesotans now and for future generations. We look to this legislature for the leadership to inspire the best in people and to really bring people together and unite Minnesota around championing issues that really do help all families survive and thrive. We really want a Minnesota we can believe in, and we really look to you to help bring us there. I really hope you vote against this amendment, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you for allowing me to testify today. For the record, my name is Ann Kaner Roth, and I'm the executive director of Project 515, an organization that works to achieve full rights and considerations under law for same-sex couples and their families. And, Mr. Chair, I do have a short handout here if the page would like to come and get it.
Very good. A page can hand that out.
Currently in Minnesota, thousands of families are treated unequally by Minnesota law. There are at least 515 instances in which Minnesota's same-sex couples and their families are treated differently than their family members, friends, neighbors, coworkers, and members of their faith communities. That is because the state grants rights and responsibilities based on the legal definition of marriage. These rights and responsibilities impact families in all parts of life: business, farming, and military, insurance, and families' ability to provide for each other, in little ways too, such as when they go hunting or fishing, and worst of all, at the end of and even after life. Minnesota law also currently prohibits same-sex marriage. As a result, we are telling certain Minnesotans that they are less deserving of being treated equally under the law. Unequal treatment under the law is hurtful and damages all Minnesota families, not just the same-sex couples and their families that this constitutional amendment is targeting. I want to tell you a short story to illustrate one of the many reasons this issue is important to me. I happen to be straight, and I'm married with three children. My closest friend Michael is gay. Our lives have been intertwined and have run parallel for about 25 years. We now live in the same Minneapolis neighborhood. He's an upstanding resident and leads a faith community in Minneapolis. We both have male partners who take a very active role raising our children. We both have responsibility for taking care of our families, at work, and a myriad of other responsibilities. However, many of the benefits and responsibilities needed to live out the obligations that my family enjoys aren't available to his family. Michael's family also has greater risks and greater costs just to try to protect themselves, raise their family, and contribute to the strength of our state. Preserving and making permanent all of these disparities by pursuing a constitutional amendment will take this state and its families in the wrong direction. I ask that you vote no on this constitutional amendment proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the members of the committee. My name is Dale Carpenter, and I'm the Earl R. Larson Professor of Civil Rights and Civil Liberties Law at the University of Minnesota. I teach constitutional law, the First Amendment, including freedom of speech and the freedom of religion and sexual orientation and the law. I am a native Texan, but I have lived in Minnesota for 11 years, and I now consider this state my home, although I still prefer barbecue to lutefisk. I am also a lifelong Republican and a conservative. And before you become concerned about my safety at the law school, let me assure you that my colleagues have been very supportive of me. They are praying for me at their church, which, as you know, is called the Temple of Liberal Orthodoxy, where the motto is, love the Republican, but hate the Republicanism. There are many reasons to oppose a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage, but they boil down to this. As a matter of law and as a matter of public policy, this proposed amendment will not help one single family in Minnesota, but it will hurt many families. The day after this amendment passes, Minnesota families will face all of the struggles and hardships that they face today. And we don't have to speculate about that effect. 31 state constitutional amendments have now passed, and I would challenge you to name one couple whose marriage was saved because their neighbors down the street were prohibited from getting a marriage license. Name one child who would have been taken away from his loving parents but for the passage of an anti-gay constitutional amendment. And here I have to disagree specifically with Dr. Morse, who suggested that there might be some tension between the recognition of same-sex marriage and parents raising their children. I assure you that same-sex couples will not be awarded the babies of straight couples when they are given marriage licenses. Any parents who want to and should be raising their children will continue to do so. I would also challenge you to name one woman living in poverty attempting to raise her child as a single mother who was brought out of poverty because the people had a vote. But something will change. For a certain number of our fellow citizens, including thousands of children, this amendment is a calamity. It is a runaway freight train barreling down the tracks, and they are in its path, tied to those very tracks by the fear of others. The reality is that there are more than 150,000 gay and lesbian people living in this state, and they don't all live in the Twin Cities. They are your constituents, and whether you know it or not, they are among the members of your family, your friends, your coworkers, and your fellow legislators. There are also more than 9,100 same-sex couples living together in Minnesota according to the 2000 census, and when the 2010 numbers come out, it'll probably be closer to 10,000. According to the 2000 census, about 20% of all male couple households and a third of all female couple households are raising children. And of course, there are many other kids being raised by single gay and lesbian parents who will never have a reasonable prospect of marriage in their future. It's a lot of people who have never had, and if this amendment never, if this amendment passes, will never have marriage in their lives. It will deny them the single most powerful and important social institution we have for encouraging values like monogamy, stability, and commitment, values that conservatives believe in. By placing this amendment on the 2012 ballot, you will be unleashing the furies, dividing family members, friends, legislators, co-workers, and citizens. Some supporters of this amendment have promised to spend millions of dollars to ignite a new round in the culture war, fanning a spark into a flame that will spread across Minnesota. We shouldn't be starting fires in Minnesota. We should be putting them out together. Millions of dollars will be wasted in a campaign over this misbegotten amendment, money that could and should go to our pressing economic needs, like the needs of our businesses to bring in the best possible talent from around the country. Believe it or not, not everyone agrees with those of us who live here and know it, that it is wise to live close to Santa's home. They have to be persuaded to do so, and they are persuaded to do so by the existence of a vibrant, open atmosphere. In fact, leaders of businesses in New York recently, just Friday, sent a letter to the state legislature urging that the state recognize same-sex marriages as a way to better the business climate. And our business community, I believe, will be looking at the same kinds of considerations if this amendment passes. Aside from a campaign, if the amendment passes, the state and its citizens will spend large sums of money while the state and federal courts try to figure out its scope and applications, which could stretch beyond marriage and have collateral effects on other areas of the law. One question that might help clarify things a bit right now, which I ask you for your consideration during your discussion. Do the sponsors of the amendment believe, or do they not believe, that it would allow civil unions or a similar status for same-sex couples, granting them all of the rights, protections, privileges, and responsibilities of marriage? Now, Professor Collette, a friend of mine, suggested during her testimony that the amendment would permit something like reciprocal beneficiaries. That's fine, but as she knows, reciprocal beneficiaries are an extremely limited status. And if that's all this amendment will allow, then it is a very narrow allowance indeed. Now, I'd like to address what I believe are a couple of the common arguments in favor of this amendment. One is the notion that we should simply let the people vote on this issue. Well, Edmund Burke, who was a founder of modern conservatism, felt quite differently. He wrote, "Your representative owes you not his industry only, but his judgment. and he betrays instead of serving you if he sacrifices it to your opinion. The founders of this country would turn over in their graves to hear the mantra, "Let the people vote." They believed that representative democracy meant that legislatures are deliberative bodies, not merely registers of public opinion. It is an evasion to say that an amendment on this topic should be placed on the ballot simply to allow a popular vote. Very few proposed amendments ever reach the ballot in Minnesota. 301 out of the last 304 proposed in this legislature have not been passed on to the voters. State legislators have an acknowledged obligation under the Minnesota constitutional amendment process to exercise independent judgment about whether a constitutional amendment is needed, advisable, and worth the expenditure of time and money that it would consume. And far from being a worthwhile use of that time, attention, and money, a constitutional amendment would be a diversion away from the state's many pressing needs. And make no mistake, your vote for this amendment will be taken by the media, by your constituents, and by history, not simply as an empty support for direct democracy, but as a vote in favor of keeping gay couples and their families out of marriage. In history, it will reflect on you personally, and it will be part of your legacy as a legislator. There was some reference also made to the need for an amendment to avoid a decision in the courts. It is true that a lawsuit was filed in Hennepin County seeking same-sex marriage, but that court, as Professor Collette noted, dismissed those claims. Jordan Lawrence, who is one of the heads of the Alliance Defense Fund, said recently to a group of people in Minnesota, "I expect that the Minnesota Supreme Court or some other lower court will again reject this challenge to the marriage definition." Now, I don't agree with Mr. Lawrence about much, but I think his prediction is accurate. Constitutional experts in this state agree that the chances of success for that litigation are very low. That's why no major gay rights group has signed on to the legislation, to the litigation. They know better. The issue was raised about whether kids would be taught something in schools that they shouldn't be taught. While there is a legitimate debate to be had about what to teach children and at what age, if any, to teach them about human sexuality, but these issues can and will be resolved independently of the question whether we should permit same-sex couples to marry. A good example of the use of this argument is what happened in Maine just a couple of years ago. One of the main organizers of the Maine amendment process admitted after the vote that his side greatly exaggerated claims that teachers were going to be required to teach anything about homosexuality. The slogan seemed to be, "Just win, baby." Well, they won, and Maine voters woke up the next day only to realize they had been hoodwinked. Finally, when it comes to religious freedom, the civil law of marriage does not and cannot track religious doctrine in a pluralistic society. Catholic doctrine, for example, holds that marriage is indeed the union of one man and one woman, but for life. Yet Minnesota allows divorce. It also holds that contraception is immoral, but state law permits married people and others to use contraception. I don't see anyone proposing a constitutional amendment to ban divorce or the use of contraceptives. We should, of course, respect all religious beliefs. That is part of our heritage as a nation, and I defend it. But we have an experience on this issue of religious freedom and marriage. There have been 15,000 same-sex marriages performed in this country in the last 7 years, since Massachusetts first began recognizing them in May 2004. Where are the mountains of lawsuits against churches? Where are the pastors, priests, and rabbis who were forced to officiate at same-sex ceremonies? There is not one case in which a same-sex marriage was used as the basis for a claim against a religious institution. Such claims, as they exist, and they are few in number, have been based on anti-discrimination laws that predated the advent of same-sex marriage. Are supporters of this amendment saying that they would also like to repeal civil rights protections for gays and lesbians, take away protections they have, such as they are, to live in their homes, to obtain health insurance and educational opportunities? Is that the next step? Professor Collette said that passing this amendment would not be an example of discrimination. It would simply be defining marriage just as we define the right to vote. When you think about it, that is a very instructive example of a definition in the state constitution, and here's why. As she well knows, we have defined the right to vote in a variety of ways in the history of this state. We once defined it as a franchise that could not be enjoyed by black people. And two times in the 1860s, the voters of this state turned down proposals to permit black people to vote. It was only on the third vote that they permitted that to occur. Once they rejected a proposal for women to be allowed to vote, and the proposal was only to allow them to vote in local elections. Finally, after 50 years of statehood, this state passed a state constitutional amendment to allow women to vote in library elections. That was as far as the state was willing to go. It took the 19th Amendment to change that practice. Let me offer this, Mr. Chairman, in conclusion. In its 150 years of statehood, Minnesota has enacted many changes in the practice and law of marriage and other family-related topics like divorce and adoption. Many of these changes have been controversial and have generated considerable debate in the state legislature and among the public. Minnesotans of goodwill may continue to debate the merits of legally recognizing same-sex couples through marriage or, I hope, through some other status. But in its entire history, Minnesota has never cut short the ordinary legislative process regarding family law by enshrining one particular view into its constitution. There is no compelling reason to do so now, and every reason to reject such a proposal. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, you may begin. Please identify yourself for the record and welcome to our committee.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Dr. Paul Melkert, and I'm a pediatrician in Minneapolis. I have the privilege of working in a clinic that takes pride in caring for families from diverse backgrounds with diverse medical needs. As a native Minnesotan, I grew up in Chaska, graduated from St. Olaf College, and received my medical degree in pediatric training from the University of Minnesota. My family and I live in South Minneapolis and are members of the McAllister Plymouth United Church in St. Paul. I'm a member of the American Academy of Pediatrics, which is a national organization of more than 60,000 pediatricians committed to the attainment of optimal physical, mental, social health, and well-being of all infants, children, adolescents, and young adults. The marriage amendment you are considering for the Minnesota Constitution would have a detrimental impact on maintaining healthy families in my clinic and throughout our state. The proposed marriage amendment is discriminatory, divisive, and harmful to children and families. My clinic has a proud tradition of providing the same outstanding medical care to all families, regardless of their backgrounds, because we believe all families are deserving of respect, dignity, and rights. I'm greatly disappointed and saddened to hear leaders from faith communities of such diverse backgrounds claim that different people and different families are not worthy of equal respect, equal love, and equal laws. Civil marriage should be a social institution that promotes healthy families regardless of whether they are headed by the same or opposite sex partners. It confers a powerful set of rights, benefits, and protections that cannot be obtained by any other means. Enactment of the marriage amendment prohibits these legal and financial rights, benefits, and protections, which greatly threatens children's access to health insurance and health services. Parenting by same-sex couples is an established, valued, and growing part of the diverse structure of families in Minnesota and the United States. Nationally, there are between 8 and 10 million children raised in gay and lesbian partnered households. Census data reveals that there are more than 16,000 same-sex partnered households in Minnesota, and same-sex couples live in every county of our state. They're radically and racially and ethnically diverse, have partners who depend on them financially, and actively are participating in Minnesota's economy. They have economic resources similar to those of married couples. In the Midwest, 35% of lesbian couples and 22% of gay male couples are raising children. The majority of same-sex parents are creating families through adoption, surrogacy, or in vitro fertilization, much the same way many heterosexual parents do when they struggle with infertility. These are deliberate, wanted, and intentional pregnancies resulting of many of the beautiful children and families I have the privilege caring for every day. There is substantial evidence supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Academy of Family Physicians, the American Psychological Association, the American Psychoanalytic Association, the National Association of Social Workers, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry, and the American Medical Association to show that children raised in same-sex parents and families fare just as well in all areas as those raised by heterosexual parents. The only recognizable difference through these studies is that children raised by same-sex parents are more nurturing toward younger children and demonstrate a higher level of tolerance for diversity. However, same-sex families have no legal protections. There are serious legal, financial, and social ramifications for same-sex couples and their children resulting from initiatives to prohibit civil marriage. It's very important to understand the context in which this amendment is being considered. Harassment of gay and lesbian people, especially young people, is all too common. Throughout our states, Minnesota schools are bravely establishing anti-bullying laws to protect our children. On Friday, the Senate Judiciary Committee voted yes on an amendment that tells many children and families that they are neither safe nor equal. Children are watching how we as adults relate to one another. Children learn from us as we demonstrate respect, tolerance, equality, and understanding. They also learn from us when we disrespect and bully one another. This amendment would create an inequality in our state's constitution, a civil document intended to be free of religious bias that promises to protect equal rights for all Minnesota citizens. The impact of such an amendment threatens the legal, financial, and psychosocial health of the children born to or adopted by same-sex parents who love them and assume responsibility for their welfare. Minnesota has wonderful traditions of inclusion, tolerance, and support for one another. Let's continue to build on those strong traditions. The proposed marriage amendment strengthens no families. Rather than creating an amendment for the sole purpose of discriminating against a group of people, we should instead be focusing on legislation that truly strengthens and supports all families, including improving health care and education for all children. Mr. Chairman and members, the American Academy of Pediatrics has identified the strong link between the health and well-being of children, the support and encouragement of all parents, and the protection of strong family relationships. I would like to emphasize the importance of opposing efforts to amend the Minnesota Constitution to ban marriage and other legal protections for same-sex couples. Conscientious, loving, and nurturing adults, whether they are men or women, heterosexual or homosexual, are amazing parents. The rights, benefits, and protections for all can further strengthen every family. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Melchert. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. I am David Patton. There's been a lot of talk today about the good of the children. And as a man with two gay dads, I'm here to tell you that we are doing just fine. There are three of us, my brother and my stepbrother. All of us have growing families and good jobs. I myself am a first-year law student at the University of Minnesota. I'm actually in Professor Carpenter's con law class, and I will share with you one thing that we at the U take for granted, and that is the fact that Professor Carpenter is always right. My dads met on April 24th, 1983. That is the day they celebrate as their anniversary because they don't have a wedding anniversary. This year they would have celebrated their 28th year as a couple, except that my dad, like men throughout history, forgot his anniversary. I actually shared this last week in the Senate committee hearing, and my dad was watching and rushed home and bought flowers and dinner and took it home to George. If there's any doubt that these two guys are a couple, that these two guys are a family, you just have to spend 20 minutes with them and you'll know. They are about the cutest couple you've ever seen. When George is gone, my dad will call me, and he always has some reason, but you can tell it's just because he's lonely. He misses his partner. They were good parents. I learned a lot of what I know about being a husband and about being a father from watching them. My wedding day, which was without question the happiest day of my life to date, was officiated by my dad, who is also a Baptist minister. I just found out that my wife is pregnant, and that the happiest day of my life may be soon supplanted with the birth of our first child. I find myself consciously and consistently overwhelmed by the desire to protect my family, whoever they are. Whoever this child grows up to be, I want their future assured. And if my child is gay, I want my child to have the same rights of family that I have. I want my child to have a wedding day like I had. I beg of you, do your jobs. Represent. Use your judgment. And if you feel the urge, if you're persuaded by the call to let the people vote, to let the people choose, then rather than this illusion of a choice, this underlining and highlighting of the status quo, give us a real choice. If you feel the need to put an amendment on the ballot, put an amendment on the ballot that will allow us to redefine marriage, to define marriage as between two people who love each other. Give us a real choice, or else use your judgment to protect the rights of those whom you are called to protect. My family is one straight man, one straight woman, six grandparents, various aunts, uncles, cousins, greats, and one unborn child. My family is one of the families that will be harmed if you pass this constitutional amendment. Please protect my unborn child. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Patton. Welcome to our committee. You may proceed. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Beth Johnson from the League of Women Voters, Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to speak today regarding House File 1613. The League of Women Voters of Minnesota believes that this bill, which proposes an amendment to the Minnesota Constitution on same-sex marriage, amounts to an assault on minority group. While the League of Women Voters has no position on marriage, we do have a strong position in support of equal opportunity in public services for all people. The proposed amendment will prevent same-sex partners from having the many rights, protections, and benefits conferred by marriage. Furthermore, we believe that this highly divisive amendment is dangerous and unnecessary. It is dangerous because it sets apart a minority group and specifically denies them the civil rights of the majority. In fact, this proposal is of a special concern because it would turn constitutional history on its head by requiring Minnesota to restrict, rather than guarantee, the civil rights of a portion of its citizens. The proposed amendment is unnecessary because the state Supreme Court ruled unanimously in 1971 that there is no right to a same-sex marriage contained in the state constitution. And although the League of Women Voters does not agree with the decision, the legislature has already acted to make same-sex marriage illegal in Minnesota. The fundamental rights of any minority should not be subject to the vagaries of the majority. In this representative democracy, we expect our elected officials to make informed decisions and safeguard the civil rights of all of our citizens. The Minnesota Constitution is a remarkable document. It is about rights and liberties, and its spirit is honorable and generous. Alterations to it should be rare and deeply considered, and made with the good of all people in mind. The amendment proposed in House File 1613 does not belong in our Constitution, and the League of Women Voters of Minnesota urges you to reject it. Thank you very much for your attention.
Thank you, Ms. Johnson. Next, you may proceed. Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you hear me well enough?
We can.
My name is Jeff Wilford. I'm the father of a KIA in Kandahar, February 27th, 2011. Given the failure of my attempt to use reason and logic to open minds and hearts last Friday on behalf of our state constitution, and the supposition now that this House committee, like the Senate committee, is also a stacked deck, I'll make no direct appeal to defeat this bill to the members of this body. You march in lockstep, those of you who are for this amendment voting, you march in a lockstep to a cadence of denial of reason. So I will turn my attention instead to the veterans of the state of Minnesota. I speak now directly to every Minnesotan veteran from this chamber, and I speak to you over and beyond the political right and left, especially beyond those who are pushing this constitutional amendment initiative on marriage for the 2012 election. This is tantamount to a game of three-card Monty about freedom and privilege. A right is being palmed and taken off of the table. The armed forces are probably the best example of a melting pot in this country. And as veterans, you know, regardless of rank, regardless of creed, regardless of sexuality, you leave no fallen behind. You know the military does not give up their dead easily, and having lost our eldest son in military service, we now know this firsthand. Unlike these politicians, you know what the dignity and decorum of a ramp ceremony means. As veterans, you seem to have a deeper sense of fraternity and inclusion than the civilians you serve to protect. As veterans, you take the Constitution very, very seriously. I dare say veterans living in Minnesota are not going to take kindly to the notion that our state constitution is about to be put to a ballot to embrace a definition that implies an ironclad exclusion and removal of a civil right for a minority group. I turn to you now, veterans, and I say to you that the Constitution is being toyed with for political gain, and with the intent to subvert freedoms. There are shenanigans afoot. You veterans, don't show up at military burials with crucifixes, Bibles, Torahs, or Korans. You show up with the American flag, the symbol of unity, the symbol of inclusion, the symbol of freedom and rights. Veterans, this is a call to act in civil affairs. It is time to remind this body politic of who has, is, and will shed blood for freedoms and rights. Please contact your representatives and tell them what you think about messing with the Minnesota Constitution. This dead soldier father needs some help here. I'm having a hard time showing these politicians where the boundary is between freedoms and religion. Friday, and presumably today, I will have lost twice in this battle. Please do not leave me alone on this field, Minnesota veterans. Thank you for your service. Thank you for your commitment to defend and honor freedom and equality under the flag and the Constitution of these United States. I suggest this legislative body tread very lightly on our veterans' sense of patriotism. Their service is deeply rooted in the Constitution of rights they swear to protect. Rile these veterans and you will have a lot more to deal with than a minority whose rights are already curtailed under civil law. Thank you.
Thank you. We're just under 10 minutes left to go.
Mr. Next. Chairman.
Welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record. Thank
Mr.
you.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, my name is Bruce Ozzie, and I would like to thank you for this opportunity to testify today. I am a husband, father, grandfather, retired educator, and along with my wife, Kathy, are 17-year members of Red Wing Chapter of PFLAG, parents, friends, and families of lesbians and gays. I'm also a proud Minnesotan. I'm proud to live in a state that is known across the country for how we respect and treat one another. We are all familiar with the saying, Minnesota nice. That is why this proposed amendment is so painful to our family. The hallmark of this legislation is not one of building up and supporting each other, but one of dividing and conquering. Kathy and I have three wonderful daughters and three precious grandchildren. One of our daughters just happens to be a lesbian. She would be the first to tell you that she didn't choose that sexual orientation any more than I chose to be heterosexual. Angie is in a long-term, loving, committed relationship with a wonderful partner, Cassidy. They are both successful and highly respected in their own professions. Angie is a professional golf instructor and is certified by both the PGA and the LPGA. Cassidy has chosen a career in corporate management. There is more that you should know about these two exceptional women. They are extremely compassionate towards and respectful of others. They are also proud, loving, dedicated parents of a 20-month-year-old son. I frequently hear that this marriage amendment is needed to protect and support families. I ask you today, why isn't my daughter's family worthy of support? How about my family? If this amendment passes, how will I explain to my grandson that in the eyes of Minnesota, his family is worthless? Simply stated, should his family be nothing more than chaff in a heterosexual kingdom? We all know the results. If this amendment passes or is put on the ballot, the results will be painful divisions within families, friends, neighborhoods, and communities of this great state. Minnesota can do better than that. I ask you as our state leaders to demonstrate your vision and leadership that will protect all Minnesotans equally under the state constitution. Please vote against this divisive amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, we're down to four that have been listed on testifier. I'm going to ask that each stay within 2 minutes, and I'll give you a 30-second warning and then stop at 2 minutes. Next, please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Russ Testa. I'm currently the board chair of Project 515. I have some handouts here that I'd like the committee to receive, please. Thank you. I have over 25 years of corporate experience in human resources. This includes 10 years at Mervyn's, a division of Target Corporation, where my last position was Senior Vice President of Human Resources, and 4 years as Senior VP of Human Resources at Jamba Juice Corporation. As a human resources executive, one of my major responsibilities has been attracting and retaining talented employees. These amendment bills promote inequality and anti-inclusion, which hurts Minnesota businesses' ability to recruit and retain the best talent. And I have an example I'd like to share with you today. A top-ranked college in Minnesota was attempting to hire a senior professor. And out of 120 applicants, one particular candidate for the job stood out. His academic reputation and expertise were well known, and he was considered among one of the top 10 professors in his country in his field. A critical question for him was how Minnesota law would recognize his partner and their child. In the end, the professor withdrew his application as any good father would. He put his family first. Minnesota is already at a disadvantage. Currently, 21 other states or jurisdictions provide at least some legal recognition of domestic partners. The best and the brightest have many options of where they can work. And everyone should feel welcomed and included enough to want to work in Minnesota. Inclusive and engaging business environments drive increased productivity and profits, and I have a few examples for you.
30 seconds.
This is first from Towers Watson, which states that companies with a highly engaged employee population turned in significantly better financial performance, specifically 5.75% difference in operating margin and a 3.44 difference in net operating margin. I'd also like to call your attention to the handout that I passed out, the community report, the Solva community report, which talks about people's attachment to their community being valuable in their work. A constitutional amendment that creates permanent disparities between Minnesotans is anti-jobs, anti-business, and anti-families. I urge you to vote against these amendment bills and instead focus on inclusive policies that will help you rebuild our businesses, our economy, and our state.
Mr. Testa, I need you to wrap up. We're just at over 2 minutes.
Ready?
Thank you.
Hi. Mr. Chair, representatives, I'm Rabbi Adam Stuck. Spoker, after my introduction, I would have 2 points, which I'll just say at double speed to fit within the time.
Very well.
I am rabbi at Mount Zion Temple, which is the oldest Jewish congregation in the Upper Midwest. It's 155 years old. I can't speak on behalf of our 700 households. I haven't polled each of them. I do have a strong feeling that they are against this constitutional amendment. I can, however, speak on behalf of the Minnesota Rabbinical Association, comprised of rabbis who represent the majority of Jews in Minnesota, and on behalf of the JCRC, the Jewish Community Relations Council of Minnesota, and the Dakotas, whose board has historically voted against this amendment. I and my wife co-officiated at a same-sex union in 2003. My wife is also clergy at Mount Zion. We together have been married for 19 years, 14 of them here in Minnesota. My first point I'll just make very briefly, and that is about Leviticus chapter 18, verse 22, often stated as the reason for which religions are against any kind of union between man and man or woman and woman. And I will just say that my ancestors did not understand the possibility of a relationship between two people of the same sex that could be committed and faithful. They only understood sexual relations that at that time, when marriage was at age 13, would have been a marriage breaker. And that brings me to my second point, and that is that when Alexis de Tocqueville came to America in 1832, warned against about the tyranny of the majority.
30 seconds.
There are faithful religious views on both sides of this view of marriage. To put morality to an up or down vote on the 2012 ballot is to risk the majority imposing their religious views on the minority. Our representative democracy was built to protect the minority. Putting marriage or any social issue on the ballot is to not to be celebrating letting the people decide. It is an abdication of responsibility. And just briefly, I met Reverend Battle, who spoke on the other side of this outside. We first met after the 9/11 tragedy. We've now met again today. I can't underscore the power of meeting again today. We are on different sides of this issue, but we both respect each other, and it should stay in the realm of religion, not in the state. Let's be clear. Putting this question on the table is not whether or not to redefine marriage. It is to put a moral question on the ballot that is a move in the wrong direction for Minnesota. Wrong for justice, wrong for my belief in God and God's love of mercy, and wrong for Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Rabbi. Mr. Cummer?
Yeah, David Cummer.
Cummer, welcome to our committee. Identify yourself for the record.
David
2 minutes, Cummer. We'll begin.
Yeah, David Cummer. Last time we spelled C-U-M-M-E-R. I am here as a member of Grace Trinity Community Church. A couple of years ago, I was elected to be an elder. I have attended a number of meetings of the Twin City Area Presbytery. I also did the Christmas plate for 2 years. however, you know, having trotted out my religious information, I really feel it's incumbent to point out to you guys, this is not the Religious Law Committee. This is the Civil Law Committee. You guys have not been elected to the College of Cardinals. You are not members of the State Church of Minnesota. You were elected to the State Legislature of Minnesota. Putting in a religious law into a state constitution is a very bad idea. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Comer. And last, Bishop Johnson, welcome to our committee. You'll conclude the testimony. Your 2 minutes will begin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. I am not Bishop Johnson.
Oh,
I,
not.
I do bring a statement from him.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is the Reverend Obadiah Ballinger. I serve as a pastor in the United Church of Christ. The congregation I serve is Community United Church of Christ in St. Paul Park, Minnesota, in the southeastern metro. I'm here today to bring a statement from Bishop Johnson, who was unable to join us. We have disagreements among religious traditions, and that will be no surprise to any of the members of this committee. But I object to the characterization that people of faith oppose marriage equality. The bishop and pastors you have heard testify here previous to me do not speak for me. They do not speak for the people of my congregation or the people of the hundreds of congregations in my tradition who've made public statements to be open and affirming to people of all sexual orientations and gender identities. It's our fervent belief that Christian faith and the example of Jesus that we follow calls us to love God and love our neighbors as ourselves above all else. I'm joined in objecting to this proposed legislation by people of faith from other traditions, including people in the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. And I'll ask the page to distribute this statement from Bishop Johnson. And with your permission, I will go ahead and read that. It's a paragraph here.
Very good.
Bishop Johnson says, "Gay and lesbian people are a gift to our church and our state. I'm deeply concerned that in a time of almost unprecedented financial crises, that a bill is brought forth that will certainly divide the citizens of our state and may work to undermine the civil rights of some of our citizens. Instead, let us find ways to live with our differences and to respect all of the bound consciences of our brothers and sisters and to work for justice in our land. Let us concentrate on finding ways to enhance the civil rights of our citizens and in this difficult budgetary time to find ways to care for the most vulnerable in our midst." Thank you.
Thank you. Members, that concludes the public testimony. I want to thank you all for the respect both sides have shown and appreciate your testimony and input to our committee. Members, we will discuss this and then move to a vote. Representative Horton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions for the author and then
go ahead.
Representative Gottwald, I'm wondering if you recognize a distinction between religious and civil marriage.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if Representative Horton could clarify. Did you say, do I recognize?
Yes, Representative Gottwald. Do you recognize a distinction between civil and religious marriage?
Mr. Chair, Representative Horton and members of this committee, I would remind you that the measure before you is a question to be put on the ballot in 2012 regarding a constitutional amendment. I'm not sure how that's germane to the bill, but I believe there's been testimony here today that has indicated that this is both a civil and religious matter.
Representative Hartman.
Representative Gottwald, do you believe that the Catholic Church is obligated to recognize all civil marriages?
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Horman, this isn't about my beliefs.
Well, Mr. Chair, the reason I ask these questions of Representative Gottwald is that in support of his bill today, he's brought people to speak on behalf of their biblical traditions and their different branches of Christianity. And they have put forward a reason for us to adopt this amendment and put it on the ballot, that this is a biblical definition or a definition of marriage that's consistent with the Torah. And so I think it's really relevant whether the author of the bill recognized a distinction between religious and civil marriage, because, Mr. Chair, I do recognize a distinction between religious and civil marriage. And I'd like to talk about the issue of civil marriage, which is the only one that we as state representatives can have an impact on.
Representative Hartman, we can discuss your beliefs. I would ask you to not go down the road of questioning individual members' motivations. And we'll focus on the bill at hand. If
thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not questioning motivations. I'm just questioning the legal status and the understanding of the two different institutions. The civil institution of marriage, some have said, is this inviolate thing since time immemorial has been between one man and one woman. And I would just like to point out that the civil institution of marriage has evolved over time. What the civil institution of marriage used to be was a transfer of me from property of my father to be property of my husband. And the civil institution of marriage used to not allow me to own property or convey anything in my own name. Not until 1848 in this country did I have rights in any state to legally transfer property as a married woman. So that the definition of civil marriage has evolved over time, and thank God that it has. I think that we should vote this proposed amendment down today. I don't think it should be put to a vote of the people of Minnesota, because marriage is a fundamental civil right, and the Supreme Court has held that in Loving versus Virginia, in Griswold versus Connecticut. At the time of the decision in Loving versus Virginia in 1963, the same reasons were cited for forbidding interracial marriage as are cited today for forbidding same-sex marriage, that God was against it. And I think that history won't judge us kindly, just as history would not judge these folks kindly in the past. At that time, it was represented that Almighty God created the races, white, black, yellow, Malay, and red, and he placed them on separate continents. All but for the interference with this arrangement, there would be no cause for such marriages. That's what apparently the Almighty God was saying in 1963. In 1967, the Supreme Court, however, ruled unanimously that marriage was a fundamental civil right. It was fundamental to our very existence and survival. They stated that to deny this fundamental freedom is surely to deprive all the state citizens of liberty without due process of law. Under the Constitution, the freedom to marry or not to marry a person resides with the individual and cannot be infringed by the state. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I appeal to you not to put the question of fundamental civil rights on the ballot for majority vote. We've already heard from the legal expert from the University of Minnesota that if we put women's rights up to a vote in an earlier time, it wasn't so very successful. If we put African American rights up to a vote in an earlier time, it wasn't so very successful. And ultimately, it's the court that interprets the Constitution and preserves for each one of us our civil rights. It is not the majority vote that gets to decide what my civil rights are. And so, members, I think this is really a call to conscience. I know this is a difficult issue, but I hope on the grounds of the 14th Amendment of the Constitution and the Supreme Court authority in Loving versus Virginia and Griswold versus Connecticut, the members will vote no on the bill.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Gottwald, can you tell me, is the Constitution designed to limit the hands of the people in the face of the government, or is it meant to limit the powers of the government at the hands of the people? And if you need to phone a friend on that, feel free.
Representative Gottwalt, you have an answer, or one of the witnesses?
Real quickly, Mr. Chair and Representative Lesch. No, I don't need a helpline at all. I am hoping that we can focus the debate on the bill. I believe the rules of the House, the rules of this committee, therefore, are to focus on the matter at hand. The matter at hand is whether or not we will, on the 2012 ballot, put this question before the voters of Minnesota. The debate we've been having here today is certainly, I think, kind of a reinforcement to the kind of conversation that needs to happen statewide around this issue. But this question is being proposed to be put before the voters of Minnesota in 2012 on the ballot, and we want to give Minnesota plenty of time to consider that carefully. I think this is a very important issue from a civil perspective and deserves that kind of careful debate. So I would ask that we keep our conversation focused on what this bill does and does not do.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe I'm on the wrong bill. Don't we have a bill up proposing to put the issue to the voters to amend the Constitution of the state of Minnesota? Or am I in the wrong committee?
That's correct, Representative Lesch.
Okay, well, I'm going to repeat my question then, Representative Gottwald. In your understanding, is the question that you're proposing today to put before the voters to the Constitution. Is the Constitution a document designed to limit the powers of the people in the face of the government, or designed to limit the powers of the government in the face of the people?
Representative Gottwald, any?
Well, Mr. Chair, I will point out again, this is putting a question before the people. It is not amending the Constitution. I'll go back to Representative Hortman's comment. We are not voting down or voting up an amendment today. We are voting on a bill that puts a question before the people.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If that were the case, if this just went straight to the people, we could get it on by initiative and referendum and just amend the Constitution that way. But you need to get the approval of the legislature to put it on the ballot. That's what the Constitution says. So if you're not willing to answer that question, I guess I'll just skip it, because maybe you already did. Let me ask you another question, if I can, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lesch.
Can you think of another example, Representative Gottwald, where we have amended or voted to amend the Constitution to exclude a class of people from a specific right where the Supreme Court has specifically stated that right is available to the people? And my understanding, just by way of clarification, is the United States Constitution recognizes the right of marriage on 14 separate occasions. Can you think of another example where we have had a bill before the legislature that removes a right from a class of people instead of specifically grants a right?
Representative Gottwell.
Well, Mr. Chair, I would remind Representative Lesch that this is current state law. Part of the reason that we're bringing this question forward, wanting to bring it to the voters of the state of Minnesota, as more than 70% of them have indicated they would like to have that opportunity to do, is that we already see politicians and courts wanting to redefine marriage. We are interested in making sure that that is more permanently defined. Again, this is existing state law. As far as taking away rights, I'm not quite sure what Representative Lesch is speaking to.
Okay, thanks, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to go ahead and put you down as a no for that one.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I in light of those answers, I probably don't have any other questions, Mr. Chair. I can provide time for comment at the end, or should I just make my comments now?
Go ahead, Representative Lesch. Okay. It's soon 10 after 2.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll make it brief. I was intrigued by Professor Carpenter's testimony about the types of amendments that we did put before the voters. And incidentally, for members that are interested, Deb McKnight did a great paper in November of 2004, Minnesota State Constitutional Amendments, Frequency, Number, and Ratification Rates, and notes that about 50% have been ratified. Professor Carpenter noted that specifically we tried to extend the right of the vote to African Americans three times, 1867 and 1868, and it was only in the third time that we actually got it passed. And of course, this was after the Civil War. 1875, we put before the voters to authorize the legislature to grant suffrage to women in school affairs. That failed. 1877, to vote in local optional elections. That failed. Finally, in 1898, you go ahead and serve on a library vote board and vote there. Incidentally, in that same election, 1898, a constitutional amendment was put before the voters in Minnesota and passed to make it more difficult to amend the Constitution, because before that, it just required a simple vote. Now, if you don't vote, it counts as a no. Well, that was done specifically in 1898 at the behest of the liquor industry, who was nervous that prohibitionists were going to get prohibition passed in Minnesota, and they didn't want the constitutional so easily amended. Now, I would note that within a generation before that, it was their first governor, Henry Sibley, who was concerned about the ease with which we could amend the Constitution, because he was concerned that constitutional changes would result from feverish and temporary excitement. Members, you know that this is a hot issue before the voters today, and maybe it'll get you some votes in a general election a year and a half from now, The fact remains you don't put things like this in the Constitution. Just like we saw from Prohibition, which was enacted, Representative Gottwald, through the Volstead Act, but nonetheless, it was a constitutional amendment in the first place. It was in place for 15 years. People may remember also that former Representative Seifert is fond of touting a list of statistics of the counties in Minnesota that refused to vote for the repeal of Prohibition in the early 30s, and noting the similar trends that we have to alcohol issues and representatives in those same counties today. Members, voting for this is on the wrong side of history. You know this. You know there's a freight train coming, that we're extending more rights to people as recognized in the Constitution than less. We're going to end up, if you pass it, this thing's going to end up getting repealed, just like we did Prohibition. That's why you don't treat constitutions in this matter. You don't make them subject to feverish and temporary excitement. We're wasting our time on this when we should be solving the budget. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lesh, for talking about the budget. Members, this is current law. And instead of balancing the state budget, we are having six hearings on constitutional amendments this week and only four budget conference committees. And just on this committee alone, Representative Pepin, Hoppe, Mazzaro, Runbeck, Westrom all serve on these budget conference committees, as well as Representative Gottwald. So the Public Safety Committee has still not met. Their first meeting was just posted for Wednesday. That's 34 days after it passed off the House floor. State Government Finance will be meeting for the first time tomorrow, 27 days after it passed off the House floor. Only K-12 Education is meeting today. Transportation, Environment, and Jobs have met only once, with no additional meetings posted. Transportation and Jobs met before the spring recess, and the Environment met on Friday. There is 1 year between now and the time that this would need to be voted on by the people. We have 20 days to finish the budget. We should be dealing with the matters at hand, and this is current law. So I encourage members to vote no on this proposal, and let's get down to the business of the state of balancing the budget.
Representative Hillstrom, just so you recall, our committee is a policy committee. We deal with policies and have all session, and this week, as you know, is our deadline to pass bills through. So it's completely appropriate, I believe, for us to be passing policy bills through. That's what we've done all session, Representative Hillstrom.
And
fiscal matters we send to a finance committee. Representative Simon.
Mr. Chair, if I may.
Representative Gottwald.
Let's set this matter at rest right now. We are focused on the budget balancing like a laser beam, as the majority here.
Looks like it.
We are meeting in conference committees. We are working thoughtfully on the budget. And frankly, it would be very helpful if our governor, who believes that massive tax increases are appropriate, but has had very little, I think only a handful of votes in this entire session on a couple of occasions, from either side of the aisle to do any such thing, we'll get realistic and step up to the table and work with these conference committees. So, Mr. Chair and members, just to that point, we have the budget and balancing our budget and creating jobs as the top priority. That continues. Much as finance bills move through the legislature and numerous policy bills do, we can do both at the same time. It's very possible. And, Mr. Chair, I would just argue that that's a bit of a red herring.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I don't think I need to emphasize that this is a solemn kind of occasion and hearing. This is not just a statute, and there are a lot of members on this committee who have not been around when we debated constitutional amendments, but those who have know that this deserves a special seriousness, special thoughtfulness, special reverence, special caution. And one of the things that makes this important is that if this gets on the ballot and it passes, Representative Gottwald, judges a long time from now, when every one of us in the room are dead and buried, are going to be looking at the legislative history in part to determine what words meant and what we meant. And they're going to be looking, some of them in particular, at the author's intent. Mm-hmm. So while I understand the impulse to deflect questions about the actual amendment because they may be uncomfortable, I think you have to understand, as I'm sure you do, that we're talking about history now. History going forward 100, 200, or more years. So I'm going to ask you about the bill, and it's not to question your motives, but I want to know, as future judges will want to know 100 and 200 years ago, or years from now, what you mean and what the amendment means. So I'm going to ask you a couple questions. On line 1.9, of the bill, it has the phrase valid or recognized. Valid or recognized, both words. Can you explain to the committee and for posterity, to future judges in 100 or 200 years, why both words?
Representative Gottman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, Representative Simon, I appreciate that. And believe me, I think everybody around this issue takes this very seriously. I think I want to thank the testifiers on both sides of this issue for being here today and talking about this, because it is important. You're absolutely right. I think valid, if you think in terms of what marriage is and is not, has its own meaning, and recognized by the state of Minnesota. I think is the way that we would define those two terms. I think they're both appropriate in this sentence, I think I'll leave it at that, Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald, I understand you think they're appropriate, otherwise you wouldn't have put them in here. My question isn't whether you believe they're appropriate. My question is, and what every court is going to want to know, because as you know, in constitutional law, every word, every phrase, even punctuation is scrutinized and analyzed for its meaning, especially when and after all the authors and all the people alive at the time are gone. So this hearing is going to be dusted off 100, 200, or more years from now, and people are going to want to know what the author's intent was, because that's entitled, according to some justices or judges in their jurisprudence, to extra special intent. So it's not just kind of, we're not asking for your flip observations. We're asking, and if you need to talk to Professor Collette, that's fine, or whoever else might have helped to draft this or might inform your view, that's okay. What I'm wondering is whether both words are necessary to accomplish the purpose. In other words, if someone said, you know, we don't need valid, we can just say one man, only a union of one man and one woman shall be recognized as a marriage in Minnesota, why wouldn't that be okay? Why is valid also necessary? If you know, and if you don't know, that's a perfectly valid answer as well.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, I'll ignore the term flip, because I think we both agreed that this is a serious matter and we're addressing it accordingly. I think my answer previously was not flip at all. Valid has the term that it has the meaning that it has. Valid, meaning that the marriage would not be valid if it is between people of the same sex. Recognized, meaning that we would recognize the validity. So it is both an observance about what the state will recognize and whether or not something will in fact be valid. I don't know how to describe it any better than that, Representative Simon. Perhaps you could provide more detail, but I believe those terms are fairly clear.
Well, Mr. Chair and Representative Gottwald, again, I don't doubt that in some minds they might be clear. That wasn't my question. My question was why both and whether both are necessary to effectuate the purpose. I'm not hearing an answer, and so I'm just going to accept your answer as whatever future judges and justices want to read into that, which I predict is not much. Professor Collette talked earlier. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Professor Collette talked earlier about the fact that this amendment would not foreclose the opportunity of other potential legal arrangements. I have to say it's a little bit ironic, because she remembers, as I do, when I served on this committee 6 years ago, that she made the drive up to Grand Rapids, Minnesota, where the majority at that time decided to do a hearing in Representative Solberg's district at the time on gay marriage, and she drove up there and she testified in strong support of a bill that would have foreclosed all of those other arrangements, because it said it wouldn't recognize any marriage or its equivalent, which included civil arrangements of all other kinds. She's apparently changed her tune. But my question to you is whether you agree with her, as I heard her say, and if I've mischaracterized her remarks, she can tell me what I heard her say, that the language of this amendment, as worded right now, and keep in mind you're answering for posterity to judges and justices hundreds of years from now, it's important. I heard her to say, and I want to know whether you agree or disagree with her, that this language, if passed and enacted, would allow other arrangements that would confer other rights on same-sex couples.
Representative Gottwald.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon and members, I'll remind you what we are voting on today is a question to be put before the voters of Minnesota in 2012. And Representative Simon, if I need to read the bill to you, I will, but I don't see where it prohibits any such thing. I think what it says is, and I'll repeat it again, the question to be placed before Minnesota voters at the 2012 general election would be, Shall the Minnesota Constitution be amended to provide that only a union of one man and one woman shall be valid or recognized as marriage in Minnesota? And I find that self-explanatory, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Simon.
I do too, and I agree with your interpretation of it, but I just want to make sure, because there are judges and justices now, yesterday, and tomorrow who might disagree. And it's important that they understand what your reading is. It's maybe not dispositive, it might not carry the day, but it might carry some weight in some judges' minds in the year 2280 or something like that. Well, Mr. Chair, there will be more time for this, I hope, on the floor, but I just want to say that, you know, I really appreciated Professor Carpenter's testimony in particular on this point, but this is, it seems to me, fundamentally a religious question. And as he pointed out with respect to contraception and divorce and other matters, there are a lot of family-related religious doctrines that we all hold dear and carry and believe in, but none of us go running to the state to ask that those be validated and enshrined in the Constitution. I happen to be Jewish, and according to our sacred text, eating pork and shellfish is not allowed. But I would never ask the state or federal government to end pork subsidies. It wouldn't even occur to me. And there are other similar doctrines that none of us would seek to impose on our fellow citizens just because of religious doctrine. You've heard that there's division within that doctrine. Rabbi Feller, whom I respect, but who certainly doesn't represent my views and doesn't speak to what I believe to be the Jewish tradition on marriage, he has his own strongly held beliefs, and he's a learned man. But you heard Rabbi Spilker, from Mount Zion Synagogue, which is my father's congregation when he grew up, say something different. So even within the faith community, there are strong disagreements and strong differences. But we have to be careful about trying to enshrine our beliefs, however religiously valid we may believe them to be, in the Minnesota Constitution. And what I'm hearing today and what I heard on Friday was largely a religious justification for change in the Minnesota Constitution. I don't think that's right. I don't think it's fair. I think it departs from our tradition. The other thing, which I know makes some people squirm, but I think we have to discuss it, both during an election campaign, but here at the legislature too, is how much of homosexuality is nature versus nurture? Is this something that you learn or acquire, or is this something that you're born with? Is this just another lifestyle choice, like skateboarding or gardening? Or is this something that's innate with a human being? And I want to take a page from what I heard last Friday in the Senate testimony. There was a member of the clergy, forgive me, I can't remember his name, and he said, you know what? Sexuality and sexual orientation are a gift from God. And I think that's true. And I think the scientific evidence shows more and more every day that sexuality and sexual orientation are innate and something that people are born with. And I would ask everyone on this committee, not today, not tomorrow, not next week, not even this year, but at a moment when you can be alone with your own thoughts, to ask yourself, if that's true, if it's even possibly true, what does that mean to the moral force of your argument? Just ask yourself, not now in the glare of the Capitol and caucuses and interest groups, but ask yourself if it's true that sexual orientation is innate, God-given, then what does it mean to the moral force of your argument? And I guess to put it in the vernacular, what I would ask is, how many more gay people does God have to create before we ask ourselves whether or not God actually wants them around?
Please keep applause to yourselves.
How many gay people does God have to create before we ask ourselves whether the living of their lives the way they wish, as long as they don't harm others, is a godly and holy and happy and glorious thing? I've answered that for myself. I don't think everyone's answered that for themselves necessarily in this room. But I'm comfortable with a society and a tradition that bends towards justice and fairness and wholeness and openness and compassion. And I do think, as others have said before me more eloquently, that that's where the arc of history is bending as well. And I truly believe that in a generation, maybe not even a generation, but certainly many generations from now, if we pass this, if we put it on the ballot, if this becomes part of our Constitution, history will judge us all very, very harshly. And I think that the people who vote for this today and in the future will, although their children and grandchildren can and should be very proud of them for their service to the state of Minnesota, will on this issue not be so proud. And there may even be some justifiable shame there as well. And I think that's something that we all have to think about and justify in our own consciences. So I strongly urge a no vote.
Thank you, Representative Simon. Representative Gottwalt, any closing comments?
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Representative Lesch asks for a roll call. Representative Gottwalt.
Mr. Chair, I'll just mention again briefly, this is something we are putting before the voters of Minnesota. Over 70% in recent polls have indicated they want the chance to discuss and vote on this. We are doing it this year to give them time to do that. I think, in fact, the debate and testimony you heard here today indicates very strongly that there is a desire out on Minnesotans' parts to talk about the definition of marriage and not leave it up to the courts and not leave it up to politicians, but actually have Minnesotans discuss this and vote on it on the general ballot in 2012. And that is what this bill does, members. It is not about hate. It is not about discrimination. It is about defining in Minnesota's Constitution the definition of marriage. And with that, members, I'll encourage a yes vote.
Thank you, Representative Gottwalt. The chair will renew his motion to pass House File 1613 and re-refer it to the Ways and Means Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Westrom?
Yes.
Representative Druskowski?
Yes.
Representative Lesch?
No.
Representative Goonhagen?
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom?
No.
Representative Hilty?
No.
Representative Holberg?
Yes.
Representative Hoppe?
Yes.
Representative Hortman?
No.
Representative Mahoney?
No.
Representative Mazzaro?
Yes.
Representative Pepin?
Yes.
Representative Peterson?
No.
Representative Runbeck?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
Yes.
Representative Simon?
No.
Representative Wardlow?
Yes.
With 10 ayes and 7 nays?
With the vote of 10 in favor, 7 against, the marriage amendment, House File 1613, has been passed and referred to the Ways and Means Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Representative Gottwald. Any other items before the committee members? Meeting is adjourned.